the valley. Whales. Now, is this sperm or blue tip?
He said, hey man, look at all the stuff they got. How'd you make a have out of a have not?
The Nonprofits. I'm your host, Dennis Lube, along with Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Schilling.
Yes.
And the redoubtable Russell Glasser.
Indeed.
And it's just us, because it's impractical for everyone to be the Nonprofits. And if no one was, then we wouldn't be here talking to you. Likewise, because it would be arrogant of us to suggest we broadcast for all time from everywhere, and because we also think more of ourselves than to never broadcast from nowhere at all, we're instead coming to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the first day of March, 2008. And since we think a moment of silence is kind of dumb and a live orchestra too expensive, the music you heard was simply a recording of Who Needs Information by Roger Waters. Because we can't pick everyone's pocket, nor spring ex nihilo from nothing, the Nonprofits has settled for sponsorship from the atheist community of Austin, a nonprofit organization for the promotion, not fanatical, of positive, not perfect, atheism, and, rather than the creation of a Taliban or the destruction of civilization, the separation of church and state. To find out more, but not too much, about the ACA, you can contact their voicemail at 512-371-2911, or visit the website at www.atheist-community.org. The ACA hosts a non-mandatory happy hour that may last more than an hour and fall somewhat short of delirious at 7-ish on Thursday evenings at the Dog and Duck here in Austin. The Nonprofits is broadcast live, not too loudly, every other Saturday from about 2 to 3:30-ish Central Standard Time, more or less. If you want to participate in, but not directly control, the show, you can visit, but please, don't hack our website, at www.nonprofitsradio.com and join our non-restricted chat room. So, by being neither too smart nor too stupid, we'll try to deliver a show that's neither too detestable nor too wonderful.
Now, do I ruin these introductions if I make a guess about what they're supposed to be?
No, go for it. What is it?
Excluded middle?
I don't know if that's what it's called. I think
false,
the excluded
false
middle
dichotomy
is a different thing, but it's the middle ground, you know, saying the truth lies between two extremes, which is not necessarily true.
Kind of the opposite of the excluded middle,
actually.
Yeah,
it's kind of the opposite of the excluded middle.
Is there a name for that?
Yes, there is, and I don't know what the hell it is.
Oh, bullshit.
Bullshit.
Is it fallacy of compromise?
Might be. Might
the fallacy of Buddhism, I think.
Well, let's see if any of our listeners know.
Oh, somebody does.
I'm sure there's a know-it-all out there somewhere.
Right.
I would imagine.
But not two know-it-all.
Not two know-it-all.
They don't.
That's
right. They know it all, but not all.
But not all. They know most.
Know it some.
Okay, you know it sums.
Yes.
Go to it.
So it's been a couple weeks, and we're back. Odd that it's always been a couple weeks.
It's weird.
Yeah, every time we do the show, it's like, you know.
It's almost as if it's not a coincidence.
Designed, if you will.
We've designed somewhat intelligently a bi-weekly.
Well, think through the odds of it. How many shows have the nonprofits done? With how many hosts showing up for what percentage of those shows? You have a great deal of variables involved.
Yeah, but 2 weeks, the Earth travels a specific distance.
Right.
And it's doing that every darn time. So we are based on sort of a physical, you know, basis. It's like,
based on a physical basis.
Yeah, yeah. Every, you know, however many 100,000 miles the Earth travels in 2 weeks, we have another show. What a coincidence.
Clearly, God likes the Fortnite.
That must be it.
Night.
So what's everybody else been up to? My answer is nothing, and I won't go into it.
Well,
I just did.
Working on games and stuff. Doing
art and stuff.
I've just joined your club, Matt. As of Monday, I am unemployed.
Ooh. I'm still the president, though. Still the president of the unemployed club.
I'm pretty sure I have you beat, though.
Oh, yeah, actually, Schilling wins by default.
I'm not only a member of the Unemployed Club for Men.
The Unemployed Club for Men. Oh.
So, oddly enough, you know, we post this podcast, and we post a podcast version of the Atheist Experience, and then we post the whole Atheist Experience up as one 90-minute thing.
Yep.
Some folks have taken it upon themselves to start ripping little clips out of the Atheist Experience and posting them on YouTube.
Really? Yeah.
And one of those, an 11-minute clip from 2-3 weeks ago, actually got more email in a shorter time span than any of the shows we'd put up before.
If you want to be hip with the kids, Matt, you say it went viral.
Well,
YouTube,
I'm getting old.
YouTube is seen by everyone.
Yeah, well, we've been talking for a long time about doing that. Let's pull out 5-minute clips, let's pull out 10-minute clips, and get some of them up there. We'll do like some best of callers or a particularly good addressment of a topic.
It takes our listeners to actually get their butts in motion and do it.
Yeah, well, we're completely volunteer run, and some of us are stretched pretty thin. And plus, I don't want to be the guy, as I'm on there every week, who goes through and decides what the best thing I said was.
And it's also a huge pain in the ass. Because you'll remember a great call that you want in a clip. Then you have to try to figure out which show it was in. Scan through that 90 minutes trying to find it. We really should be more proactive and during the show take notes.
Has the guy who went to that effort actually responded to you?
No.
Let you know that he did it?
Nope, but I'm going to talk to him at some point.
Anyway, the bottom line is we got flooded with mail this week, and I was mad because it wasn't a show I was on. But
it was actually from the show Mark Lowy was on.
Yes, although Mark didn't say much during
the Mark didn't say hardly anything during the clip. He did ask one relevant question that spun off the discussion.
So,
it's all you, Matt. Good
are we
job.
Going to jump on the wall for copyright infringement?
No.
No, good.
There are some ACA members and some volunteers and fans of the show who are interested in it. I was just going to suggest, you know, Google Video has this thing where you can link to a timestamp.
Yes, I already suggested that.
And what my suggestion is rather than people just doing that because it could still be problematic to load and it's not nearly as fun, is if you find a piece in one of the Atheist Experience videos that you really like, link it to us by timestamp.
Right.
And then we can start having people, if they get time, clip it out and post it up on YouTube.
Yeah, because
if we had a webmaster who was so inclined, we could even have people vote on what the best clips are. But
of course, requesting this, we may get flooded.
Yeah.
Potentially, but still, I mean, if you get flooded with emails and a few of them point to the same to the same show.
Yeah, but somebody has to tabulate.
Right. But we've had a guy at the studio who just on his own went out and he made us a few promo clips from just different clips of different calls, and that's great. If we can do more stuff like that, that'll really widen the audience base.
Now, do you think people like that clip more because of the arguments involved or because it ended with that guy saying, "Okay, well how about I just come down there and punch your fat face in?"
I don't know.
That has to be a Christian, doesn't it?
I
well, you know, I heard your reaction to the call, and I remember...
He called twice.
It seemed to me that it was just a guy doing prank calls. But he hung on for 11 minutes pretending to be the sort of viewer that we'd normally get.
Actually, he handed the phone to somebody else who hung on for 11 minutes. That's what I'm convinced of. They've called many times before.
Yeah, it does sound like a different voice.
The guy calls in and does the I'm going to punch you in the face thing, and I hang up on him. Yeah. Then another guy calls in and has this big, long conversation with me, and at the end seems to hand the phone back to the original guy because the voice completely changes. And then he does
Weird.
The punch in the face. I don't know. And this isn't the first time that this guy and these guys have called.
The way that everybody's been reporting it on the videos that they've been reposting all over the place, they said, listen to this guy. He has a meltdown at the end, which I don't think is what happened at all. I think that that's what he was planning from the beginning.
Contrived...
He was just biding his time waiting for the opportunity.
The folks who watched the whole 90-minute show actually heard him call in earlier with this, and he was just... They've actually, I'm assuming it's two guys, they've actually done this many, many times before. I recognize both of the voices.
Is it always our show?
Yeah.
No.
No, but they've called our show many, many times. Matter of fact, there's another clip up there where the guy calls in to say he's got proof of creationism, and Tracy and I are on, and we try like hell to get him to actually present some proof of creationism. He starts off with evolution... you know, anti-evolution remarks. Then he switches to the Big Bang, and we go through all this, and Tracy finally says, okay, let's assume that evolution is completely false. Give us your evidence for creationism. And he comes back with, well, one of the things is the Bible says, and I was like, whoa. You know, you have to, I know what the Bible says. You got to give me the reason why you think it's true. Well, It has humanity starting with two people, and so does evolution. And I was like, no, that's not true. And Tracy goes, yeah, and we just said evolution.
Running out of pretend.
Yeah, and Tracy said, yeah, and we just agreed evolution's false, so you can't bring it up. You can't have it both ways. You don't get to pick and choose from it. And finally, after like 10 minutes of this, I just, can you just give us what your evolution, what your evidence is for creationism? Well, there's men and there's monkeys. And that's when we hung up.
Yeah, and you think that was the same guy?
Wow.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Okay. What is their objective? I don't get it.
Well, that could just lead us to a great disproof of Christianity.
You know,
there are Christians and there are Jews. It's as sensible.
More.
But I mean, I've been thinking about it, and it's like, if the point is just to get on TV, we'd let them do that anyway.
I don't want to take callers who just want to get on TV and say something. I mean, we used to get a lot of those, and we got hung up on them.
Right.
No, the objective is to waste our time and piss us off.
Except it's not working, because that was the most popular clip we've ever done.
It drew more mail and more attention to the show.
Wow.
It actually promoted a good discussion, and it ended with them embarrassing themselves and didn't piss us off at all.
Right. I mean, their point may have been to embarrass you, but the impression that was taken away by viewers who were, in fact, misinformed about what the clip was boy, that guy made himself look stupid.
So yeah. it was a troll that backfired?
It was an own goal.
Wow.
I'm not completely sure what the deal is. I didn't read all the comments on the YouTube clip. I did read some of them.
A lot of them say, what a bunch of intolerant atheists, right?
No.
They always say that.
No, there's actually a lot of positive comments on it.
Oh, good.
One of the ones that hit me was some guy posted saying that I made up a whole bunch of words at the beginning of the discussion.
What?
And people have been reaming this guy left and right.
What words?
Please give examples of the words that he used. And I don't think he ever provided the words. But everybody deduced which words he was talking about.
Uh-huh.
Epistemology being one of them.
Epistemology is a fake
heuristic
word.
Heuristic being another one that they think that he... So it's like, oh, wait a minute. Because he has a slightly larger vocabulary than you, he's just making words.
Well, he thinks because there was piss in the word that it had to be fake.
But, yeah, that was... Like I said, I didn't read all the comments. It goes on for pages.
Funny.
And most of them were positive, and I'm not... I don't want to read them, and I don't want to get involved there. And one of the reasons why I haven't gone through, you know, during this downtime of not working and picked out those little clips is not only do I not want to be the guy who picks, you know, what was the best clip, I don't really like watching myself.
Oh, God.
Once the show's over, I just don't like to do it.
As clips go, my favorite clip is that one that's on the MySpace.
Why don't you get electrocuted in the shower?
No, it's not that one. It's this older woman who calls in, and she's really nice about it, and she's just explaining that without God, she doesn't think she could get up in the morning. And Matt goes on this, like, three-minute rant about how depressing it is that the only thing that can get her up in the morning is this thought of a God, and that she doesn't have anything else to live for. It's a damn good clip, so I would encourage people to check out the ACA MySpace, which
anyway, enough probably blowing hasn't me. Changed.
I do want to hit a couple of announcements. The first announcement is next Friday, the 7th, is the first ACA pub crawl.
Yay.
We are meeting at 8 p.m. at the Dog and Duck.
And it won't really start out as a crawl, but I have a feeling it might end up that way.
Yeah. People are encouraged to park along San Jacinto if you're coming, just so we don't crowd the Dog and Duck lot and then leave. It should be a pretty good time. We're hitting five or six different bars. We've got T-shirts made up. It'll be a great event. And the other one is, again, Richard Dawkins is coming to Austin, Hog Auditorium, March 19th. The lecture is at 7, and seating begins at 6.
Okay, I'm going to be there at 6 then.
I'll be there at 5.
Yeah. It's probably going to be packed, so people are encouraged to show up early. And as well, I might as well mention it here, they are going to be able to have a list sort of guaranteed seats for members of the ACA or the student group or CFI, any of those organizations. So if any of our listeners are are interested in coming and they know they'll be able to make it, they can email us and reserve a seat, especially if they get off of work and don't think they can get down there until close to 7. That would be a good idea, and we'll put their name on a list, and that way they're guaranteed seats. And right. It doesn't fill up with some massive, you know, Christian youth group organization or something takes all the seats and leaves the outside.
I'd give up my seat for that. I'd stand. Well, I'm probably gonna be standing anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I had a seat,
is somebody
I'd
recording this?
Yes.
I think
as far as
last I heard, I'm actually going to be involved in that to some degree.
Okay.
Cool.
Has Richard Dawkins ever mentioned us? I mean, no. Like, I'm just saying, I'm not being that arrogant because we've been linked by Feringula, for instance.
I know that the Statesman article
from
last year on me was copied at the Dawkins site.
But we don't know that he actually is involved with...
Well, they contacted the ACA.
Mm-hmm.
Dawkins people contacted the ACA when they were first talking about doing this to see if we wanted to get involved. And, of course, we did, but... things changed over time, and CFI actually stepped in and set this up, which is, you know, I got no problem with at all. So I think they're aware. I have no idea. I wouldn't even begin to imagine that anybody knows who the hell I am or who we are. Or
yeah.
I mean, you know, we do get good email and email from around the world, but it's not like anybody known or famous has ever said, you know, hey, And if they
check
did,
out the nonprofits.
I'd have to keep it a secret anyway. Why would I want to, you know, I wouldn't want to come on the show and just start name dropping. By the way, I got email from Christopher Hitchens yesterday, and he said he loved nonprofits.
Oh, I'd name drop all over the place if he mentioned us.
Be still, my beating heart.
For all I know, they all listen every week. I'm going to assume that everybody listens every week.
Hi, I'm Christopher Hitchens. Love your show.
That's not even close to his
accent. No, it's not.
Not even when he's drunk.
But it's exactly like his demeanor.
Yes. I'm Christopher Hitchens. I love your show.
Yeah, well, yeah. This week I watched
He doesn't love it anymore.
Hello, no. I'm Ben Stein.
Oh, God,
and
no.
I hate your show. I think it's oppressive.
Somebody sent me a good email. I don't know if it's in there. The guy who wrote that he'd been expelled from Dembski's blog.
Yeah.
He just found it. I don't have it with me, but he found it ironic that
bizarre.
he posted, you know, a good discussion there at Dembski's blog, and of course he gets banned. And I was like, dude, I've been banned from Dembski's blog for 3 fucking years.
Yeah. From what I understand, that's not an uncommon occurrence at all.
No, but what the irony is that they're promoting this Expelled, where they're, you know, saying that it's Big Science who's you know, is censoring dissenting opinion, and then you've got Dembski who just bans anybody who doesn't agree with him from his blog. I mean, even Ray Comfort doesn't do that.
Well, to be fair, it's not necessarily hypocritical.
There is a guy who is banned from my blog.
The difference between keeping something out of education and censoring things in education, which isn't the case.
Sure, I'm not saying he doesn't have any right, but I'm saying that it's... there are people... His blog pretends to be a legitimate discussion about the issues, and there are people who go there and post opinions contrary to his with real scientific facts, and he deletes their posts and bans them.
Right.
To then turn around and promote this Expelled movie as an indictment of educational institutions doing or claiming to do what he actually does, that's hypocritical.
I still don't know. I think that his objection would be to educational institutions acting, discriminating in the way that private citizens should and the institutions should not.
You're not agreeing with Matt. That means you're out. You're no longer a host.
Grab his
we
hand.
Are banning
you're
you.
You're banning you.
We are banning you from Dillahunty International Studios. Thank you for trying.
Anyway, I got a story about that.
Go for it.
I would like to hear. Or actually, there's the story, and then there's the story about the story. And I printed the first, but not the second. So there's this post from the Orlando Sentinel, not the actual Orlando Sentinel newspaper part of the site, but from one of the staff who also has a blog on the site. And he went into a pre-screening of Ben Stein's new movie, Expelled, by invitation. Or rather, they sent out an invitation to the newspaper. But really, they only wanted religious people who would sympathize with the movie. So this guy posted a really, really panning review of the movie. Mm-hmm. And the Expelled website went and said that they had a security breach. Some journalist got in and watched the movie who wasn't supposed to.
Their security breach is that they didn't get the guy to sign the NDA.
Yeah, I think
an NDA.
You know, I laughed a lot about the NDA thing too, but on the other hand, it makes sense. They can have an NDA that isn't exhaustive.
Mm-hmm.
That basically says, you're limited in what you can discuss about this because you could spoil our release. Not because you give it a negative review, because you give so much information that somebody doesn't want to go see it.
Right, sure.
So it's like a closed screening.
Do commonly employ
NDAs? Yes,
they
do, actually. Yeah. I read the Ain't It Cool News site all the time, and people are always talking about, you know, I wasn't supposed to tell you anything about this movie, but...
Since they didn't get him to sign one, he's not under it.
That's true.
That's the security breach.
That's just too bad for them.
So here is the review.
The security guard with the NDAs fell asleep.
Yeah.
That's the breach.
Right.
That's the breach.
How do you repackage that tried, untested, and untestable faith-without-facts warhorse creationism after its nearly annual beatdown by an increasingly exasperated scientific community? After you've tried renaming it intelligent design, I mean. With comedy. Mock your Darwinist foes the way comics, thinkers, scientists, and educated people everywhere have been mocking creationism since Scopes took that monkey off our back. Tuck into them the way Michael Moore would, with a documentary hosted by a funny Don Quixote willing to tilt at science the way Michael Moore has gone after the gun culture, corporate cold-heartedness, George W. Bush, and big health care. Get droll funny man and ex-Nixon speechwriter Ben Stein to host it to be the on-camera jester / interviewer. I'm going to skip down a little bit. It just isn't particularly funny, or the least bit convincing. I lost track of the number of times Stalin's image hit the screen, and in the ways the movie equated science with Darwinism, with atheism, with Hitler or Stalin, subtle it's not. Stein, who co-wrote it, builds his movie on classic Big Tobacco tactics, create just a sliver of doubt about evolution by pitching this argument in terms of academic freedom. Legitimate learned scientists are being silenced by the Darwinian cabal of thought police, says Stein. He uses anecdotes from a few Fox overpublicized cases of people who claim to have lost their tenure, their jobs, their position in the scientific world for daring to suggest the hand of a supernatural being in the creation of life. He hasn't got a scintilla of proof of, well, anything. And then he has the audacity to whine, "Where's the data?" when questioning cellular biologists and other real scientists who build their lives around doubt and finding testable, legitimate answers to those doubts. Where's your data, Ben? He uses straw man tactics to attack mainly the origin of the species, as Darwin wrote it in 1859. That's like a music critic reviewing the latest music by only referring to Edison's wax cylinders. Let's see. All the creative editing in the world only let... This is skipping ahead again. All the creative editing in the world only appears to let Stein hold his own with noted British scientist and atheist Richard Dawkins, whose words can be twisted to suggest that aliens seeded life on Earth, or at least that's more likely than anything in the Bible being literally true about creation. That's still a more rational explanation than any that Stein, being a veteran Republican persuader slash operator, offers. Does he really believe the blather he tosses out there? Introducing the movie at the church screening I attended, he had to trot out some nonsense about living in Malibu, but not among the stars. The real stars are fighting and dying for our freedom in Iraq and Afghanistan. Oh, know your audience if you're a speechwriter. Pander, baby, pander. I think there were some more comments. Oh, yeah, okay. He mentions the fact that this was pretty much a closed-off screening, and he says, "Oh, and keeping your movie from the public because you're afraid of ridicule is just gutless. Put it out there. Let people have time to chew on your arguments. Your fans will buy tickets, and plenty of folks will emerge to tear it apart. But even Michael Moore has the courage to do that. Maybe Stein will repackage himself as the new face of creationism. The new face of cynicism is more like it. But, as Nixon must have reminded him, there is a sucker born every minute, and a lot of them vote."
Wow.
Well.
Oh, and that's linked on the Atheist Experience blog within the last few days.
Yeah.
I stole it from
there.
There's
been tons of discussion of this. And this new thing, this has become like the trend. And I have a difficult time believing that it's coincidence that Expelled comes out and it's making these racist Stalin-Hitler comparisons or derivations from Darwin. And Ken Ham just wrote a book that does exactly that, and it came out. I mean, the only one who doesn't seem to have done that right away among the apologists is Dinesh D'Souza, and that's because he was busy writing his latest book on why Christianity isn't so bad. And
Dinesh,
really?
Take a stand.
I think it's called What's So Good About Christianity, and then he tries to answer it. But he answers it by saying, what's wrong with atheism? And he's wrong. And ridiculously so, at every single point, right down to the fact, well, I don't want to say for sure, I think he includes a similar idea, this thing of atheism leading to hopelessness and no value placed on any other human being, which can then lead to, you know, Hitler and Stalin and whatever.
Well, it's one thing to take that straw man approach of, well, Hitler was an atheist, Stalin was an atheist. Excluding, you know, particularly with Hitler, they're factually incorrect there.
Right.
If they're taking the straw man of, well, atheism just leads to hopelessness and depravity and hedonism and all these vile things, even assuming they were correct on that, so it lends nothing to at least take a straw man that can win you the argument.
Well, they're using the
if they were right about atheism, that still leaves them with a burden of proof.
That fallacy is argumentum ad consequentium.
Yeah,
yeah.
The best thing they could do, from this is say, yes, we can't demonstrate that a god exists or a particular religion is true, but, and we'll make, just for the sake of argument, the assumption that atheism leads to all these bad things that they say it does, then the best argument they could make is that pretending to believe in their god and adhering to the dogma of their religion produces a better world. They're still wrong.
Right.
But that's the best they can do. They haven't gotten any closer to demonstrating a god. I don't care if there's a god or you can prove it. And likewise, since we've had this discussion a number of times in the past couple of weeks, I don't care what you claim to know, whether you throw a Gnostic or agnostic label on you, or I know this and I know, screw all that. Knowledge is a subset of belief. Tell me what you believe, why you believe it. I can make up my own mind. We can find where we disagree and where we disagree. Our actions are based on those beliefs, whether they count as knowledge or not. So if you tell me that you believe there's a God, present the evidence. Unfortunately, nobody's been able to do it. If you want to say that believing in God, whether he exists or not, produces a positive effect in culture, demonstrate it. So far... Yeah. What
We've
I've
been
seen is
I've
heard a pretty good,
I've
heard a pretty good
right.
proof of God.
Really?
How about I just come over there and punch your fat face in?
Well, there's men and there's monkeys. What more do you need to know? I tell you what more I need to know. I need to know which one you are.
Well, one of my favorite caller arguments that he was one of those men and monkeys types once he got on the show, but in the screening beforehand, he started off with, "I didn't come from no monkey." So I explained that that's incorrect. And he's like, well, things don't just magically change into other things. I don't have a car, but if evolution's correct, I should be able to go out and light a stick of dynamite in my driveway, and when it explodes, there will be a Civic there.
See, that's just...
That's fractal wrongness.
Yeah. That is fractal wrongness.
I think we've all used a couple of times this week, at least.
Yeah, I love it. And also, there's a guy that you... And out of all the emails we got, not all of them were positive... there's a guy you and Tracy both responded to that I had pretty much ignored until he said something that just made me go off, and I sent him one little quick reply, because he starts off, well, he doesn't start off, in the midst of this stream of pseudo-consciousness, he makes the claim that evolution violates all the known physical laws of thermodynamics. And
zoinks.
First of all, if anybody who claims that doesn't understand either evolution or the physical laws.
Right.
I think the most succinct response to that is that if evolution violates the law of thermodynamics, then standing up and walking around also violates the second law of thermodynamics, because it uses up energy.
But then they'll just say, oh, well, then scientists are wrong about the laws of thermodynamics.
See, the specific way he phrased this, though, he didn't refer to the second law. He just did this blanket thing about it.
Right.
It's in contradiction to all known... He doesn't even know what they are.
No, no.
Or why they're... even what the bad arguments are. He's just parroting out this crap. And then he goes on to make an appeal to string theory.
Oh, brother!
Because he wants to redefine God in this quasi-pantheistic way where God is not necessarily personal, but is vibration, and doesn't live in
guy?
Yes, okay. And doesn't it's all the
brother.
Same guy, and doesn't live in our
this
dimension.
This is the guy where I said, "Okay, your God is a peanut butter and jelly
right.
sandwich."
Yeah.
I ate him for lunch yesterday.
Yeah. So he then tries to use string theory to say that God lives in some other dimension, and Tracy of course says this is what you're talking about is kind of just a spin on pantheism when you're saying that. God, it's everywhere. And she went on to talk about whether or not things manifest and whether we can demonstrate them and everything else. And he shot back with, why are you belittling me? Now, anybody who knows Tracy knows that there's no chance that she's going to belittle someone. She's asking questions more than making comments. She's looking for clarification more than anything.
I definitely belittled him, and he got email from both me and Tracy, so he been confused about who was writing him what.
Yeah, I don't think he read necessarily who it was from. Somebody sent a reply, and he just,
blah, 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 blah. Yeah, ran with that.
But in good news, I got an email from somebody involved in a pastoral sense at a local church.
Uh-huh.
We traded a few emails back and forth. There were some kind of high claims early on about mm-hmm. being able to prove a God without relying on the standard arguments and appeals to the Bible and stuff.
Did he damn you to hell?
No.
Oh, good.
Did he have a crocodile duck?
Nope. He actually had a brain. We've had a good discussion so far. He's presented what his initial definition of God was. I've pointed out where I have some objections mm-hmm. to it, where I don't. And he started by making the claim that this definition of God is the one and only thing that he takes on faith and then derives everything logically from that. I said, obviously, I'm not going to be accepting it on faith. We had a little discussion about why anybody would.
Right.
And I also pointed out that he can never achieve the goal that he wants to because he's taking this on faith. If you build a logical syllogism, it's only as sound as the premises.
Right.
And if you're accepting one of them on faith, you can construct a logically valid argument that is consistent with your assumption, but it doesn't prove that your assumption is correct. You could start with magical sky pixies make right. skies blue.
You can establish
our sky is blue, therefore magical sky pixies make our sky blue.
Right. You can establish anything if you take even one premise on faith.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I told him was the only time that's really useful is if you're doing a reductio ad absurdum, if you're trying to construct a contradiction. So you'd start with, like, magical sky pixies make bright purple skies with black spots. Our sky is blue. Therein, there's a contradiction. And you've demonstrated that as long as premise two is true, our sky is blue, that the conclusion, magical sky pixies make our sky purple with black spots, is not true.
False.
You've,
right.
You've shown what you it's useful in demonstrating the that a premise that you've taken as an assumption is false. He wrote back, conceded the point, agreed to all of that. We're going to continue our discussions.
Whoa.
And tomorrow morning, Tracy and I are going to his church.
Cool.
Hey, can I go?
You can go.
Okay. Email me the details.
Okay.
Because I'm not really doing anything except buying my Swift Griffin.
Oh, shit. Speaking of tomorrow... Dr. James D. will be giving the lecture.
Yes, thank you.
At the Austin History Center at noon.
We're back to announcements briefly. Those of you in the Austin area who were expecting Mark Lowe to give a lecture on black body radiation, it's been temporarily postponed. And Dr. James D. will be coming to talk to us about, I think, isn't about like why faith is so unbelievable or something like
I
that?
The subject of the lecture sounded very interesting, but I've completely forgotten. I saw James D. and figured out I'm going.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of stopped listening to the announcement at that point.
I gave a lecture on black body radiation, would you hold it against me? Sorry, I had to throw that in. It's a wonderful cheap shot.
I loved it.
We need a drum, you know.
You know, we can do sound effects on the actual microphones.
Boom, boom.
I don't remember how to do it. We can do actual sound effects on the microphones, but I don't have a...
It's too bad nobody in right. the audience saw
that. Yes, rustling over and...
Just played a drum fill on Matt's Rock Band video game set.
Which probably started a new song if you hit the green one.
Oops!
Because it's still running. So, yeah, and, I have no clue what we were just... Oh, we got sidetracked because
I'm
of
sorry,
the
I'm
lecture.
Sorry.
You were talking about having you and Tracy and potentially Russell going to church.
Yeah, that's right. Over. We'll report on that kind of next time. I want to keep it kind of private because I have to say, and I told him this, I'm optimistic about the conversation that even if it eventually goes nowhere as far as changing anybody's mind, we're both going to gain something about it because we're both behaving ourselves and addressing things rationally and conceding points where they're lost. Mm-hmm. Out of all the emails I've received in at least the last year, maybe two, he's the most reasonable, intelligent theist who's written that I've had a conversation with.
That's impressive.
And he's friendly. I poke fun at him from time to time. I was actually supposed to go to church last Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and I let him know that I was out sinning really late and overslept, which he thought was absolutely hilarious.
Without sinning, by your definition.
I might have been out sinning by anybody's definition. So what else, what's next? What have you got? Dennis, you've got a whole stack of papers.
I got a stack of crap. Some
it's not crap. Some of it's listener mail.
I was looking through Farangula. It's always a fun thing. And he had a short bit on leap years. And said, the two most amusing explanations for why we have leap years that I've heard came from creationists.
Oh, no.
And he said, one of them is those scientists can't even measure the length of the year accurately. They have to keep fudging their numbers every few years to make everything add up. So why should
Holy
I trust them?
Shit.
Talk about fractal wrongness. I mean, my God.
We should remind people who didn't get to listen last time what fractal wrongness means.
Yes. Well, it's if someone's worldview is wrong, if you can zoom in on any small part of that,
it's wrong in the big picture.
It's wrong in the big picture.
No matter where you look closely at it, it's still wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong at every resolution of the argument. he also had another one here. We have leap years because the Earth is slowing down in its orbit, which proves that the Earth can't be old. 1 million years ago, the Earth would have been whirling around the sun so fast it would have flown out of orbit. I you know, these are the kind of arguments that when you get into one of these arguments, all you can do is stand there with your mouth hanging open going, how can I even begin to address this?
These are the kinds of arguments where you need to find as big an audience as you can as fast as possible.
Yes, because
you have to remind yourself that the point of arguing with stupid people is not to convince them of anything, but to reveal their stupidity to anyone who will listen.
Right.
See, among the various emails that we got in the past couple weeks or so, there were a number of people who were commenting on how nice we were to the callers, how respectful we were. I responded back, thank you very much. It ain't always like that.
And it's quite an effort.
And we got another email from somebody in Germany who is provided some links to examples where he thought we were behaving badly, where a caller would say something and we'd laugh at them, and or a caller would say something and we would constantly stop them and interrupt them. The thing is, when they spit something out like that, the Earth's slowing down. Or the guy I was talking about earlier who thought he had proof of creationism. You have to interrupt them. Now, it's not a structured debate. You can't let them keep going, because what happens when you let them keep going is that they make so many wrong statements that build up so many more wrong statements that you can't possibly address that, and you can't possibly point out all of where they went wrong. And so any that you miss is one that they'll just either eventually go back to.
And if you get to one of those points that builds on the earlier wrong points, you can't hope to do anything with them. I mean, because you're trying to counteract however many years of science education they didn't have. And you don't have time to do that, but at least maybe you can correct them on sort of the root of their problem and try to get them to understand one little thing, like, you know, you're fucking clueless right here. There's nothing else to say about the rest of it.
I've tried it both ways. I've tried interrupting it the first time where they go wrong, or where there's a disagreement, or where they're not clear on a definition. And I've also tried letting them ramble on. What happens when I let them ramble on is I get hate mail. Why'd you let that moron talk for 15 minutes before you stopped him? And if I interrupt too early, it's why don't you let him finish? In part, it's because we get some of the same callers. So some of these people, I already know not only what they're going to say, but they've actually said it before and we've discussed it. But the thing about building based on a wrong, an incorrect statement or false premise and working your way down, what I found happen sometimes is later on when I get to the third point in the chain of wrongness and try to say, this is wrong and the reason is because you based it on X, they'll say, that's not what I said, or that's not what I meant. And they'll deny that they've, you know, built this up from a wrong right. premise to begin with. So it's just easier most of the time for me to interrupt. And I'm occasionally going to throw a rant in because we all know I can be long-winded. But what I'd really like to do is when they say something wrong, pause, get a clarification, figure out why we don't understand this before I let them go on. And at least make the point of I'm objecting to this premise. You can continue, but you lost me at hello.
Right. Good policy. Fine.
I already gave up on trying to please everybody a long time ago.
It doesn't work.
The other reason that you need to interrupt them at the first wrong is if it, in theory, it saves you both a hell of a lot of time because they'll be basing everything off of the wrong presumption that they initially started.
Yeah.
And if that's wrong, then they need to stop and clarify. They should be happy to stop and clarify that rather than spend 3 minutes making their argument only to
have me disregard the whole thing.
I think part of the talent of debating well is narrowing in as quickly as possible on the exact point where your guys' views diverge. Because, you know, I mean, I'm okay with going way back to first principles and saying, okay, I agree with that, I agree with that, I agree with that. And people will look at that and say, what an agreeable guy. And then they get to the next stage and I say, okay, stop right there.
Yeah.
Because if you let it go too much farther than that, then there's so much enormous divergence in your views that there's no way you can come to some kind of understanding. Whereas if you find the exact branch where they went wrong, then maybe at least the two of you can say, okay, this is where we disagree and there's no way we're going to come together. Or you can actually bring yourselves closer together somehow.
Right. Right. Yeah. The caller should realize it's going to be a slow process of small steps. And they want to make these giant leaps to get you to turn to Jesus, be born again, and do everything they do. They don't want to take the time to do very small steps and just get you a little bit closer to their view, which they'd probably have a hell of a lot more success with than trying to do this leap all at once over several inconsistencies.
Which kind of resembles what I was saying about voting last time, but let's not get into that.
We already decided we're not discussing voting today.
Okie dokie. Yeah. I wasn't going to.
I will say, by way of example, you know, talking about how you end up getting way, way deep in the conversation, and then you have to kind of ferret your way back to identify the point where you went wrong. I've had this happen over and over again. I have family members who, when we've attempted to have a conversation, I'm launching objections all the way, and those objections are being ignored while they continue to build whatever case it is they're building. Then when they get to the end, I object and they don't know why, and I have to backtrack. Well, in the case of some of my family members, I've identified the point at which it's really clear that we've parted ways. And if we could have just identified this at the start, we would have never had to fucking talk about it.
Right.
The point where we disagree, they, by their own admission, accept the Bible as the word of God and fact, and it's an issue that's not up for discussion, and they're completely closed-minded about it. And I don't.
Bingo.
Every bit of that is their own admission, and I don't. And once you've set yourself up that way and admitted that you're the one who's closed-minded, that you've made this and it's not up for any you've made this decision, it's not up for any discussion, you don't care to discuss it, and you're going to base all of your future life decisions on it, you lost.
Yeah.
There's no point in us having any discussion in that area ever again.
Yep.
And I hope we don't.
That's crazed. Another one from Ferengula.
Uh-oh.
You've heard of
he's gonna sue
studies
us.
On intercessory prayer?
Yes.
It says,
it says,
the most interesting revelation I've heard, a test of intercessory prayer, where people pray or don't pray for a patient, and then the outcomes are evaluated to see if it helped. It never does. But there's another weird version of these improbable experiments, retroactive intercessory prayer. It's what it sounds like. The investigators took old hospital records from patients who had been treated 4 to 10 years before and asked subjects to pray for one group and not pray for the other group. They then looked again at the old reports to see if the patients that were prayed for now had gotten better then, and they did.
Oh, my God.
Think that through for a moment. It really is that insane.
You know, it makes me wonder.
Wait, you've got to read the end of this, though. Yeah, the next paragraph.
Yeah. So, if ever you learn that I've gone to the hospital and died, I want you all to get together and pray really, really hard and change the past so I can come back to life. Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to make accusations. There have been a number of these prayer studies where they've demonstrated intentional fraud, mm-hmm. where they've not just simply a bad methodology, which mm-hmm. maybe, I mean, you could yeah. take old records like that and do a proper double-blind study. Yeah. I'm not convinced that they necessarily did.
But I went to the site that had the paper. It was like, holy crap, they actually wrote it up and everything.
The fact that it was that it was not only
where was
possible,
it
but virtually guaranteed that somebody somewhere knew the results beforehand renders this whole thing useless.
Yeah. I mean, the choice of the set of people they're going to test, invalidates the whole thing.
No, it's not useless. Mm. Give me all of those old medical records.
Right.
And I will sort them into groups. And I will have people pray for them again to see if we can change the results.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Bring it on.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because if you take just the ones that weren't prayed for, and then you pray for them now, then you can make even more people better.
Yeah. But it's inefficient science
and
is what it is.
What you should be able to do is just keep praying over the set, you know, just keep narrowing down the set
healthy.
Of records.
They went about it the entirely wrong way.
Yeah, backwards.
Because, well, even aside from that, if they believe that their prayers changed prior medical records, why didn't, instead of taking these things that are 10, 15 years old as medical records?
I don't think they changed the records. I think they think it changed the events.
The events, at any rate, still. Do it with the same medical records as the studies that showed prayer didn't do shit. Change those results, and not only will you have your study, you'll render the real study null and void.
The original study.
Cool.
So you get 2 points with one stone.
But that could cause a temporal paradox that would unravel the foundation of the space-time continuum and destroy the entire universe. Run away.
Wow.
Great Scott.
No, mediocre Scott. He's just a horny paraplegic. The Rocky fans will get that.
Good Lord, choke.
Man.
But.
I give him a copy of the movie Primer and see if they can pray to change the movie's timelines. I don't think any of them could understand it.
See if they could pray to have a clue about it. I think that would be an accomplishment all by itself.
Now, apparently, there's a new report out from the Pew Report on American Religion. It's been reported in the New York Times. The survey finds that the number of people who say they are unaffiliated with any particular faith today, 16.1%, is more than double the number who say they were not affiliated with any particular religion as children.
Yay!
Among Americans ages 18 to 29, 1 in 4 say they are not currently affiliated with any particular religion.
Yay!
1 in 4. Whoa! That's significant.
Yeah. Now, if only we could fix education so that they'll stay that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you know, I actually saw a story that mentioned this this report and came to the conclusion, oh, these are people who just don't say what church they're in.
That's the thing. I mean, it's...
No, I think the number of people who actually self-identify as atheists has increased from like 0.5% to 1% and 1.6% or something like that. But we don't necessarily just represent that 1.6%. There are a whole bunch of people who identify as atheist, agnostic, secular, non-religious, some people who are just apathetic and unconcerned about it. There are some people who don't affiliate with any particular religious organization who do still have theistic beliefs.
Right.
I don't know that that the studies actually drill down to get that good information in this study. There are other studies where they have, where there's specific questions of, do you believe in a personal God? Do you believe in some kind of intelligent entity or a spiritual being or the pantheistic?
This isn't about that. Yeah, this is like religions. And you know, check it out. Try do a search on for the Pew Report. That's PEW Report on American Religion. And there's all sorts of interesting interpretations of the data and stuff like that.
Find some of the comments I saw was that what it's demonstrating is that while a lot of people are perhaps shifting away from belief, or a significant portion may be shifting away from belief, others are just jumping from one belief to another. Mm-hmm. The number of Protestants goes down, and Catholics goes up, or Catholics go down, and Islam is on the rise.
And the 60 and older people are all entrenched in whatever religion they happen to be in, apparently.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. It's almost a breath of good news.
It doesn't stink.
We keep our fingers crossed.
We don't when we read that report, we don't have to say pew. Yeah. Well, we do, but we don't.
It's the Pew Report.
Next.
Now, I don't pretend to understand this.
Okay.
But the article is Turkey in Radical Revision of Islamic Texts. They're apparently reinterpreting the, I guess, Quran. What can you make of it?
It may be the equivalent of the Protestant movement. It may end up being the Islamic equivalent of the Protestant movement of let's take the power away from the imams and the mosques in the same way that we took away from the priests and the Catholic Church.
So are these guys splitters, or are they?
Yeah, they're the Judean People's Front.
But they say they're trying to make it more in line with modern, civilized.
Are they actually changing the Quran, or are they revising
the Quran? They're changing the interpretation.
So it could be like the NIV kind of thing, where they're just updating the language.
This doesn't mean that you should do that. It means you should do this instead.
Your new hip Islam.
Yeah, it's not a version of the Quran. It's a reinterpretation.
Who knows what'll
happen. We talked about this quite a bit, and of course, none of us are experts on Islam.
Right. That's why I don't feel.
I have no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind, having read the Quran and the Bible, that one of them more strongly advocates violence against non-believers, and that is the Quran. Mm-hmm. They both do, and a selective interpretation of either could result in atrocities. Need we mention? I don't know, the entire Middle Ages, Crusades, and other things, the Salem witch trials. The thing is, people tend to invent their own religion, and by people, I'm talking about primarily Christians and culture in America, where you're free to do so. Everybody's got their own interpretation, and this is a direct result of the Protestant movement ripping control away from the church, where each individual had their own conscience to answer to, could have their own direct relationship with God and make their own interpretations about what it says. That freedom has allowed them to run with whatever interpretation they want. They can ditch these verses or downplay them and play up other verses. If they're trying to do something similar with the Quran, maybe you could see something similar in the future. I have a problem with all of them, because they're making an appeal to authority to a book,
right,
and then selectively disregarding or coming up with different interpretations based solely on their own personal interests and views on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Dennis, do you have an email in there from Yasik?
Check it out. That's all the email there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look at it later, but... Can I get to a story, actually?
Get to a story.
And then
you
I'll,
could have
and
if
then
you
I'll
wouldn't been sneaking around behind me.
Yeah, I know, but I just felt bad that nobody was manning the chat room most of the time these days.
They know what's going on.
Yeah.
They do better talking amongst themselves than if I jump in, but I take a look back. And
anyway, I promised to take another look at Yasik's email and reply to him, but I probably shouldn't promise that because then people will get the idea that we'll reply to everything just if they complain in the chat room. But anyway, so I've got a story from the Washington Post now, and this is about terrorists.
Terrorists?
Terrorists.
Gonna find them over there, so we don't have to find them over here.
Right.
Terrorists.
Politicians who talk about the terrorism threat, and it's already clear this will be a polarizing issue in the 2008 campaign, should be required to read a book by a former CIA officer named Mark Sageman. It stands what you think you know about terrorism on its head and helps you see the topic in a different light. Sageman has a resume. The heart of Sageman's message is that we have been scaring ourselves into exaggerating the terrorism threat, and then by our unwise action in Iraq made the problem worse, also He attacks head-on the central thesis of the Bush administration, which is echoed increasingly by candidate John McCain, that, as McCain's website puts it, the United States is facing a dangerous, relentless enemy in the war against Islamic extremists spawned by al-Qaeda. The numbers say otherwise, Sageman insists. The first wave of al-Qaeda leaders, who joined Osama bin Laden in the 1980s, is down to a few dozen people on the run in the tribal areas of northwest Pakistan. The second wave of terrorists, who trained in al-Qaeda camps in Afghanistan during the 1990s, has also been devastated, with about 100 hiding out in the Pakistani frontier. These people are genuinely dangerous, says Sageman, and they must be captured or killed, but they do not pose an existential threat to America, much less a clash of civilizations. It's the third wave of terrorism that is growing, but what is it? By Sageman's accounts, it's a leaderless hodgepodge of thousands of what he calls terrorist wannabes. Unlike the first two waves, whose members were well-educated and intensely religious, the new jihadists are a weird species of the internet culture. Outraged by video images of Americans killing Muslims in Iraq, they gather in password-protected chat rooms and dare each other to take action. Like young people across time and religious boundaries, they're bored and looking for thrills.
I object to that characterization.
Okay.
Because they're, well, obviously we don't have a great wealth of study on this third group, what their motivations are. And you occupy a country for a few years.
Well, I don't know what wealth of study it is. This is this CIA insider writing
but
about
still,
his experiences.
I can't imagine the CIA has that much study on this third group as far as why people are joining and what their motivations are. It'd be very hard to conduct a thorough study.
I would imagine that they do. I mean, I've heard lots of stories about people.
They can see a lot of the recruiting tactics and things like that.
Okay.
But as far as the motivation for kids to sign up with it, that's probably something that'd be very hard to get a thorough study on. But you occupy a country for a long time, and particularly the teenage young 20 males are going to want them gone, and they're going
to
be violent.
Healthy enough to get out and do something about it, and not old enough to have stuff to lose.
It's not necessarily a matter of them being bored, as it could be a matter of them being occupied and kind of wanting to do something about it. If you look through history, at almost any time there's that type of occupation, you often end up with a group of young males using guerrilla tactics trying to get them out. We had that with virtually every revolution.
Right.
So I'll
agree with you.
I don't like the characterization of them just being bored and looking for thrills. I think that's a mischaracterization.
Okay. I'll agree with you that that wasn't a good characterization. But I think the underlying point here is that old school terrorists, who there aren't really very much of, were religious fundamentalists who were striking a blow against the great Satan.
Right.
And the new school terrorists are people who have actually been spawned by our just deciding to go out and invade countries because it's a so-called culture war.
Right.
And, you know, in words near the end, he says that his policy advice is to take the glory and thrill out of terrorism, which is an interesting point that, you know, we've put the glory and thrill into terrorism a lot more than it used to be.
I really don't think that the way we address it has much of an impact on them. If we're occupying the country and not, you know, making terrorism sound glorious.
That's part of the way that we address it.
Well, it's part of the way we address it, but our actions still speak pretty loudly. If we're right. over there,
right.
They're going to want us gone, and they're going to take steps towards that.
Right.
I don't think it's a matter of our having glorified terrorism that lends
no,
to that.
No, I mean the reason – I mean one of the things that makes it glorious is the fact that they now have the moral high ground as a country that's being occupied.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
They really
shit.
Shouldn't. I mean right. – You know, because there are a bunch of assholes who flew planes into buildings. But it's becoming...
But that's wholly unrelated.
Right.
Especially from their perspective.
Right. Completely unrelated. And this whole fight them over there so that we don't have to fight them over here argument is bullshit.
Because they've
since,
not come here.
Well, more than that, because there are now a whole lot more people who... could potentially consider coming over here, whereas before they might have just been apathetic about it.
Right.
Wow.
Mm.
Gosh, you guys got quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
I wasn't prepared, and they finished.
What's next?
This is what happens when
I
we end up in
I've
agreement.
I've got mail left.
Go ahead.
These
and
are,
go
these
with
are
mail.
Some mails
why don't you go
that
through
Matt
a couple
answered.
Of mails, and I'll read one more story.
Yeah, some of them I answered.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's see. Hi, guys. I've emailed you a couple of times before, so here is another one. I'm Corey, a 17-year-old atheist, and I'm wondering if there are any jobs just debating people. I love to debate theists, and I can win most of my arguments against friends and people online, and I want to do it for money now. I know it would probably be a dream job to debate theists for money, but I just have to be able to tell people they are wrong and then get paid for it. Well...
there's a problem with that.
Yes, as Matt correctly points out, if there was such a job,
there wouldn't be this show.
He'd already be doing it.
There is a bit of a supply and demand issue.
Yeah, if you find a job doing that,
people.
Let us know.
What? Yeah, the supply of people who would like to just tell people they're wrong for a living. Is very, very large, whereas the number of people who are actually, say, Dr. Laura is very small.
Right.
What I would recommend to Corey is study up on your science, come to Texas, and teach biology. And he'll be able to tell all these little kids raised in their mega churches
That's
that
right.
they're
oh,
fucking
yeah.
wrong
or
and
write
get paid
a,
for it.
Write a best-selling book, because Richard Dawkins... does exactly what you're saying.
Right.
He gets paid to go places and talk about stuff.
Except that Richard Dawkins already kind of made his mark
yeah,
as a
no
as an eminent scientist first.
Yeah,
you
no
know,
one's really
okay.
entered the fray
Hitchens.
As a professional
I mean,
debater.
Hitchens, he goes around debating people.
But Hitchens
specifically.
Built up by being a very well-known and well-respected journalist.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you can't just
the
enter the debate.
So Corey, you're 17 years old. I think you got to get some cred. Right.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like I said, everybody wants to just be able to tell people that they're wrong for a living. But
not me. You
know. Well, there was that cartoon on Frangula.
Oh yeah,
where
right.
the guy said,
XKCD,
"Honey,
right.
come to bed. I can't right now."
Somebody
Why not?
Wrong on the internet.
I can't leave right now. Someone's
Sorry.
Wrong on the internet. Yeah, it's like
right. But that just makes my point, which is that lots of people will do that for free.
Yes.
And as long as that's true, there's not a marketplace for paying you to do that.
As an example, there are three contrarians here who are wholly unemployed.
I don't expect to be unemployed.
I didn't either.
Oh, shit. Be quiet.
So we'll parrot your finishing sentence and say, if you know of any jobs like that, please tell me. Yes.
Okay, but here's the other thing is there are a lot of things that you can study that will give you some kind of credibility. And, you know, there are rewards from that that go beyond being paid to tell people they're wrong. I mean, you can study up on law if you want. That might, you might enjoy arguing with people, not necessarily fundies all the time. I used to have some thoughts about going into politics, which I now realize are ridiculous because I'm an atheist. But my dad said, you know, doing a great campaign like whoever you admire is one thing, but once you get elected, then you have to actually write policy. So,
right.
You know, that's kind of the hard and not so fun part.
Well, I would say particularly if you're 17, I'm not trying to denigrate Corey at all. If you're doing really well arguing with your friends and some people on the internet, I'm pretty sure there are people out there who you would do less well against. I'm not necessarily saying his arguments are bad or anything like that.
None of it matters. But there's no job.
I know, there's no job, but look for harder audiences. Really look to stretch your skills in arguing. And if you can come up with a more eloquent phrasing of an argument than has been thought up before, you've got a pretty good head start.
I'll even make Corey a deal. Impress me with the debating that you've done. Come to Austin, and I'll put you on the show. You can have a week answering calls.
Pays really, really well.
Show doesn't pay anything at all.
Right.
But at least it's something you can put on your resume that you debated on live TV.
I do want to add something encouraging, though, which is that if you work on your communication skills, that only helps you. Not necessarily in getting to tell people that they're wrong, but in, convincing people that you're great and worth hiring for whatever you do.
Yeah, I have to say, even though the interviewing process hasn't been abundant. I got called back for multiple interviews with the companies.
Yeah.
And I was more comfortable sitting there talking and answering questions, partly because I'm more comfortable with myself in general than I was ages ago. But also, after doing both of the shows, I can enter into conversations with people and mostly, hold my own. And
that's
maybe
important,
even,
yeah.
You know, be productive. I had fun interviewing, which I didn't used to do.
Usually in speech, you take a lot of shortcuts. You minimize how many, like the types of phrases that you use. Mm-hmm. You'll stick with certain phrases for certain situations. But if you're going into any argument with a form of structure, you really become aware of the nuances in the language and how some phrases are extremely good for this point, whereas a phrase that you would have considered synonymous beforehand really has this touch of nuance that spins it a different way.
Oh, God,
and you really get a strong grasp of the language and how it suits you, and that's going to bleed over, and that's going to make a huge difference in doing anything. When you can state yourself articulately in a way that, with a single sentence, you can eloquently say exactly what you meant, not just really close, which is what we tend to settle for with language.
See, that's one thing I actually hope to be able to do one day. My best advice to Corey, surround yourself with smart fucking people.
Watch a lot of Hitchens.
Because
and disagree with them.
Yes, and do. Because being with Dennis Schilling, Russell, Tracy, Jeff, Ashley, the co-hosts on the TV show, I don't know that I could argue a tenth as well if it hadn't been for contributions from all of them. And they likewise gain things from everybody else.
So
it's a kind of feeding frenzy. And, Tracy will come up with a certain just nice little metaphor or way to phrase something that I'll then, you know, run with. Or Dennis will come in with even fractal wrongness, or there was another one of yours about, well, that we had the big discussion with regard to
free will,
consciousness and free will, but about like matter transporters that would disassemble you and then put you back together. There was some really good stuff in there as well. And, of course, Russell just wrote something the other day that I thought was freaking brilliant.
So. And I want to give a shout-out to Jeff, who we miss him terribly on the show, but I've tried so hard to steal a lot of his style. I don't know that I succeed in it, but...
There's going to be an open spot on the TV show. Ashley, for various reasons, is going to have to stop doing his monthly TV show rotation. And the first thing I did was... go to Jeff and ask him if he was going to be available to do it. He's not,
shoot,
because of work conflicts.
Yeah, he's got a real job.
We're looking into what to do about all that.
I have an idea I'd like to talk to you about on that anyway.
Sure. Did you hand me this because you wanted me to read it?
Yeah. Whether you wanted to read it or not. I mean, you know, if you want to, read it. If you don't, don't.
Well, if you do,
it's
we avoid
all
the...
all I've got left is listener mail.
15 seconds
I've
of dead air.
Some people have already dealt with the things.
Russell, you can go ahead and...
get the story out.
Hit the story.
This is from an editorial in the UK Guardian, and so not all of it is worth going as just being some guy's opinion, but I do want to highlight some things. He mentions a study that was published in The Lancet that shows that between 1995 and 2003, the global rate of induced abortions fell from 35 per 1,000 women each year to 29. And this period coincides with the rise of the globalized secular culture that the Pope has been lamenting.
Uh-huh.
When the figures are broken down, it becomes clear that, apart from the former Soviet Union, abortion is highest in conservative and religious societies. In largely secular Western Europe, the average rate is 12 abortions per 1,000 women. In the more religious Southern European countries, the average rate is 18. And in the U.S., where church attendance is still higher, there are 23 abortions for every 1,000 women, the highest level in the rich world.
Well, according to Theus, obviously the solution is more of what doesn't work.
Right. In Central and South America, where the Catholic Church holds greatest sway, the rates are 25 and 33, respectively.
Oh my God.
In the very conservative societies of East Africa, it's 39. One abnormal outlier is the UK. Our rate is 6 points higher than that of our Western European neighbors. I'm not suggesting a sole causal relationship. The figures also reflect changing demographics, but it is clear that religious conviction does little to reduce abortion and plenty to increase it.
This can go straight into the same file as that Journal on Religious Studies that we've commented on, I don't know how many times in the last 2 or 3 years, where religiosity has a negative correlation to societal benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't hear that. There's guys doing construction outside. I'm assuming nobody can hear it since we can't hear Russell if he moves too far from his mic. I got somebody emailed us. I don't know if you've seen this documentary for The Bible Tells Me So, but I highly recommend you guys check it out. Is this the same one?
Yeah, it's your response.
Oh, yeah. And the response that I sent out was, I haven't seen the film, but I'm interested in watching it. However, here's my problem. I watched the trailer, and there's a nice gentleman there who sounds very reasonable and states that the Bible has been misused to support prejudice, apartheid, segregation, slavery, second-class citizenship of women, and now it's being misused to condemn gay people. He's wrong. It's not being misused. It's being used. The Bible does support slavery, doesn't condemn it. The Bible does condemn homosexuality and never openly says that it's okay. If it did, why we'd have a blatant contradiction and no possible resolution. What these folks do at best is interpret other passages, more general passages, as their preferred outlook or as the trump card that overrules an earlier statement. But it just doesn't fly. I'm interested to see how the film addresses this because short of chucking out the entire book or ignoring passages you don't like, I see no justification for folks saying that folks like Fred Phelps are misusing the Bible.
Yeah.
They're misusing it to support what it says.
Right.
And that's just... unacceptable.
Yeah, I hate them when they say they're misusing it. I go, no, fuck no, man.
And this is the big objection that I have. If you're going to reinterpret the Bible to say something that seems to contradict what it literally says, throw the damn book out and just say that that's what you fucking believe.
Right.
Right.
You don't need a book to back you up. Matter of fact, you don't. Not only do you not need a book to back you up, you don't need anything other than reason to back you up for your beliefs with regard to moral issues. I believe in doing X. I don't believe in doing Y. Here's the reason why. You can accept it and or not. If we agree, then congratulations. We can become part of a cooperative society. We can begin to enforce these as rules to some extent. And in some cases, we need to say, you know, those are so contentious and so many people disagree that we just need to let everybody do what they want to do to the extent that it interferes with somebody else's life.
I was just talking to a coworker right before I finished up my job who had been talking to one of those sect of Christians who believes that you shouldn't drink.
Right.
I'm not sure which particular sect this was, but my friend brought up, what about that part in the Bible where Jesus turned the water into wine for people?
It was non-alcoholic wine.
Yep. You didn't tell me that story,
did you? It was grape juice.
No, they said he really said it was non-alcoholic wine.
And there's a good biblical justification for that.
No, there isn't.
Oh, yes, there is.
Come on.
Uh-oh.
Yes, there is. I don't think
you're
that...
ruining my point. Dan.
No. I think what we're doing is expanding on the point that we're making. It's like the doctrine of hell.
Yeah.
There's a good, solid biblical backing for thinking that hell as a place of eternal torment doesn't exist. Uh-huh. Because what the Bible talks about is eternal punishment, not torture, and being dead forever is eternal punishment. There's a guy who wrote an article about this recently. Billy Graham accepts this. He rejects hell.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Has for years. It's one of the reasons Fred Phelps went after him with a vengeance.
He neither accepts nor rejects it now. But
yeah. True enough.
Yeah.
So what's the support for it being non-alcoholic wine?
Because there are specific passages about differentiating between wine and the wine that moveth.
Oh, okay.
What? Okay.
Do not look upon the wine that
moves.
Are
they talking fiber or what?
No, they're talking the fermentation process.
Oh,
that
okay.
One is wine means
so the word
grape juice.
Wine
Jesus
is a
just got a whole lot less cool in my book.
Grape juice.
It means something different now than it meant then, potentially. And there's tons of stuff like that. There's tons of things
of the Welches
that meant something different then than it means now. And that's what allows for a variety of translations. I'm not saying the guy who said that it was non-alcoholic wine is correct, but if his view of interpreting those passages is that it's okay to drink grape juice and not wine, then he can make a biblically supported argument for it. And somebody else can do the exact opposite.
True.
Right. Because it's just a big book of choice.
Yeah. Which is why, I mean,
pick and choose.
It's exactly what I was saying a minute ago. If two people can look at the same passage and interpret two different ways, then congratulations. Neither one of you gets to use it as the foundation for your argument. Support it some other way. I don't care if you dig somewhere else in the book to justify your position. At some point, you've got to get outside of the book.
Yeah, I would recommend that people try the poem Jabberwocky, because you can also interpret that in a whole lot of different ways.
It was brillig in the slithy toads, the gyre and gibble in the wabe. All mimsy where the border grows and the woop. Never mind. I'm going to stop. Mostly because I don't think I can remember it after that. But
I can remember more at that.
Not me.
So, we got like 10 minutes left.
Oh, boy.
We do?
Do we have more mail?
Do you have more mail?
I got one more, and I don't know if we addressed this earlier. But I'd like to start off by, let's see, who is this? This is Connor. Says, I would like to start off by saying I enjoy your show, and it's a huge relief from the constant preaching I have to listen to. But I have a question about your opinions on an issue that is hardly ever talked about on your show. When you guys read emails from atheist teenagers who have problems with their religious fundamentalist parents, your opinions seem to be deal with it until you can move out. correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't yet heard any of you mentioning if you have to deal with overbearing parents who resented your religious beliefs while you still lived with them. This problem is bigger than you realize. Since they found out I was an atheist, not only do my parents take direct action that negatively impacts my present, but they are creating restrictions that may potentially harm my future. Present, restricted internet, phone, AIM, and iPod access, for example. They monitor my chat logs and occasionally read my phone's text messages. I'm required to read apologist material, such as Lee Strobel's Case for Faith. Also, I have to attend church at least once a week or else suffer consequences, such as having to take care of all my own transportation, meals, etc. And the future ramifications? My dad has specifically said that he won't support me if I study anything he doesn't agree with. For example, I am interested in biology. He won't help me financially if my career has anything to do with evolution. You may have noticed I have no trouble sending this email to you, but that is only thanks to the fact that my parents aren't home right now. I have to do all my research about religion without them knowing, so I'm learning to cover my tracks. My parents found out about my atheism by reading my AIM logs on our computer, so I've learned to be careful. Your opinion, advice would be helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, we all kind of agreed not to respond to this by email.
No.
Right.
No, actually, we didn't.
But
see, I think email is the most appropriate way to respond to it.
I emailed him, but I also wanted to read my response, since he obviously gets to listen to the podcast.
And others are probably suffering in the same way.
There's a reason why we would generally try to avoid that, and it kind of addresses in my response. Mm-hmm. So here's what I said him. You didn't mention how old you are, so I'm not sure how long you're going to have to endure these restrictions, but I'm very sorry to hear about the difficulty you're having. One of the reasons you haven't heard us discuss this is because out of all of us, I'm the only one that's come close to dealing with this, but I was well into my 30s at the time, so I wasn't under their thumb. My parents think I'm working for the devil. They've prayed for their God to stop me no matter what the cost, and I can easily imagine that I'd be dealing with a situation similar to yours if this had happened while I was living at home. There is no easy answer.
Mm-mm.
Until you're legally allowed to strike out on your own, you're pretty much forced to endure the restrictions. There's another reason we haven't discussed this. We're reluctant to give advice to minors. It's always risky to stick your nose into someone else's family, not to mention the potential legal troubles we could become part of. However, I do have a few bits of advice. Number one, stay positive. These troubles won't last forever, and if your parents are threatening your future, start making plans to ensure your independence. Number two, work hard enough in school to qualify for scholarships and grants, if at all possible. Number three, study the apologist material they give you and study it critically. I've read all of Lee Strobel's books. My folks actually made a special trip to ask him in person what they should do about me.
Oh, my God.
He sold them books that I'd already read and written rebuttals to. By looking for the logical fallacies, tactics, and misinformation in these books, you're becoming better educated. Studying additional materials concerning religion will also help. Number four, take notes during church services. Listen to what the minister says, find the flaws, and note them. If he says something particularly outrageous, send it to me. We'll talk about it on the show as a sort of inside look about what's coming from the pulpit.
Number five. This is great, Matt. I didn't know you wrote this.
Yeah.
Number five, being serious about the previous two isn't just a good way to develop critical thinking skills. It's a way of arming yourself for future discussions with your parents and others. It will be very difficult for them to carry on a conversation with you if it becomes clear that you know more about their religion than they do. Now, having said all that, you may simply not be interested in learning that much about religion. It's still a good way to build critical thinking skills, but if you're not interested, then that plan won't work quite as well. But you can continue to let them know that you love them, that you're a good person, just for the sake of being a good person, with no thoughts about reward or punishment in this life or any other. Religious people, particularly Christians, assume that anyone who rejects their God concept must be intrinsically immoral. It's very difficult for them to see the child that they love doing the right thing, demonstrating love, respect, appreciation, caring, and other virtuous behaviors, and still think poorly of them. Your parents can have difficulty, or my parents still have trouble reconciling this. I'm a decent guy, which means I can't be the immoral reprobate that their religion seems to tell them that I have to be. If you've got hobbies and interests that have nothing to do with religion, pro or con, continue to enjoy them and excel at them. Try to find some like-minded people at school. You may not be the only one in this situation. Lastly, you can write
me anytime with whatever questions you have. I can't pretend to answer, to have all the answers or even great advice, but it really bothers me that someone is being punished for being honest. And that's a point you might make at the right moment. Explain that you just can't just believe something. You can't force it. You either accept it or reject it. You're either convinced or you're not. Would they rather you pretend to believe so that they'll feel better? Don't they want you to be honest? Don't they want you to form your own beliefs and opinions based on reasoned evidence and argument? What good does it do?
The question is that. Of course they don't.
What good does it do to try to force someone to believe? What good does it do to punish someone for being honest? Doesn't their God want us to freely choose to worship him? Isn't this all part of God's plan? Couldn't he reveal himself to you if he wanted to believe? The questions go on and on because their position is indefensible. They can offer no evidence or reasoned argument. Why do they believe? No, really, what's their great reason for believing? Figure out what it is and poke it full of holes. But no matter what, stay positive and be respectful. Attack ideas, not people. Let them be the ones who are punishing people and offering no justification. You may never win them over, but they'll constantly be bothered by the fact that you were the better person through all of it.
I will say as a bit of advice, something that might work, and it depends on the brand of religious parents. When I was in high school, I had a lot of religious conversations with friends, and some of them ended up atheist, and their parents were none too thrilled. One of them, you know, his father did the same thing with Lee Strobel mostly. You know, God, you have to read this.
Lee Strobel is just and such an easy and universal target.
Yeah. What he ended up doing was he finally had a conversation with his father and said, do you believe that your religion can hold up to scrutiny? And, of course, he said, yes. Do you believe that, you know, he just asked him questions along those lines of, do you believe that your religion can stand up to all of this? And then the idea he proposed was that each week he reads one of the apologist books and then a book attacking the religion. And by his father's admission, if he's well-educated on both, the Christian side will win, and not only will he become Christian again, but he'll have this thorough knowledge of the opposition and be able to attack it. And his father actually went for that. I don't know that many would.
What a dupe!
Nice setup.
It's brilliant.
Wow!
But that worked out very well for him.
I bet. You know. Go ahead.
Put them in a position where continuing actions as they are is explicitly pointing to a weakness of their faith.
Mm-hmm.
Where if they have to punish you, it's because that's the only way that you're going to go to the faith. It's not going to be through education or argument or anything like that. So just put them in a position where they either have to admit the weakness of their religion or allow you to educate yourself on both sides of the false dichotomy.
Why are you grounding me because God didn't touch my heart? Shouldn't you be grounding God?
I think what makes me maddest about this, and I'm least equipped to deal with this, I thought about this and I couldn't make any headway of it because I had wonderful atheist parents who supported me in everything I did and paid for my undergrad school. What makes me maddest about this is the fact that they're setting strings on their kids' education. I can't get less mad about that, except to say, you know, there are a lot of kids who just aren't lucky enough to have parents who can either afford to send their kids to college or are encouraging about sending their kids to college.
Right. Well, the college thing.
So you're no worse off than them to start with. Uh-huh. You just are not in the situation that you thought you were.
If he's interested in biology,
yeah,
that is pretty well going to require at least a master's, very possibly and probably a doctorate, if you're going to school for it. What he could do is do his undergrad in something else, particularly if it's something like English. That you could still go to graduate school for biology.
Not English. I thought the idea was to make money.
You know, well, the idea, if you're in biology, if you're pursuing a science and you have to get an undergrad degree outside of science, that's a good one because that's one of the weaknesses of a lot of science grad students is they can't write a fucking paper. So, any undergrad degree that's outside of biology that can contribute something, I mean, medieval history or probably not so
or
relevant.
Do something in one of the more innocuous sciences, like physics. You know, your parents can't say that you're studying physics because you want to destroy God, but you can study physics with an eye of being being a graduate.
Get as close as you can while still under that, and have them pay for undergrad.
Chemistry.
Yeah.
Chemistry is closer to biology, I think.
But a lot of Christians are still kind of edgy on chemistry.
Okay, stick with physics.
Yeah, that chemistry kind of applies to that whole primordial soup thing.
Math
is pretty safe.
I don't know.
Unless you want
three and one and three.
I mean, there are fields of math that would be particularly valuable. It might be a good idea to talk to an advisor. I mean, you know, start out college with your parents paying for it. Talk to an advisor about how close you can get to a biology degree without looking like you're taking a biology degree.
Right.
Yeah. You're going to study fractal math to find out how wrong you are.
It's
statistics and probability, that sort of thing.
They're all good options, even though I think some of them are kind of an end around. Bide your time, do the best you can, and do what you want and do what you care about. And your parents will either disown you or continue to love you, and things will work themselves out. If they disown you, they're not worth caring about. They're not worth being concerned with anymore. This idea of honor your father and mother no matter what is horse crap. If your dad beats you, if your mom's, you know, a drunk who doesn't care about you, and they want to specifically inhibit your future and your education, they're no longer worth your concern. Yes, it's sad. Yes, it's, you know, they're family, but, you know, I don't think that's remotely the situation you're going to have to deal with. I think your parents are probably just as most any other going to keep on loving you, and they're going to be pained by some of your decisions, and they're going to think some of it is wrong, and they're going to be difficult in certain areas, but it certainly can't take long before you show them you know more about what you're talking about than they do, and
you know,
nobody wants to argue against people like
that. If they actually believe that, you know, you're going to go to hell unless you shape up, right? Well, they love you because they have to do whatever they can to make sure you don't.
Yeah.
You know, go to hell.
Yeah, I mean,
and
your parents are wrong,
it's too bad,
but at least
wrong,
they care.
But at least they care.
Another potential option, and this one might even be dicier, and it still, again, depends on the particular religious bent. Talk to your preacher about the situation. If your parents already know you're atheist.
It depends on what kind of
boys. It depends on what kind of religion.
Depends on.
But
that may be a good, really good piece of advice.
If you can talk to the preacher, and the preacher sees what's going on, sees that the situation that your parents have put you in is, if anything, driving you farther away from it, he might talk to them and try to get them to take a more subtle approach.
That is good. Yeah.
That is.
You know the preacher's going to have influence over your parents more than you will.
And that's why you're here, because I didn't think of that.
Yeah, but if his name is Jim Jones and he serves Kool-Aid,
I don't think I'd have thought of it either.
Go and have a Sprite.
Yeah.
Have you got, like, closing remarks?
I do. Where did I put them?
I don't know.
Oh, no. Dennis, we can't end the show.
How can you do this whole middle ground thing without an ending?
Well, I've got it. All right. Well, that's it. It was there, wasn't it? We'll probably be back in about 2 weeks with another show. Until then, I'm nearly Dennis Lube, almost with Matt Dillahunty.
See you next time.
Schilling.
Yes.
And just about Russell Glasser.
Bye, I think.
We leave you with Who Needs Information by Roger Waters. Bye-bye.
Whales. Now is this sperm or blue tip? Shelby said, "Hey man,
Look at all the stuff they got. How'd you make a have out of a have-not? Who needs information when you're working underground? Just give me confirmation. We could win a million pounds. Barely climbed up on a footbridge, and he teetered on the parapet. He said, can you see the whites of the headlights? Are they coming yet? Who needs information? This high off the ground. Just give.
Brothers in jail.